there. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Butchery.
This episode is all about animals and the witches who love them.
We'll look at four-legged, furry, scaly, slimy creatures and the roles they play in magic.
In witchcraft, we'll make some black cat oil.
And in Spelled Out, we'll talk about connecting with a familiar.
Okay, animals.
Yes, animals. So,
yeah, we've been wanting to do this episode for a really long time. We just haven't really gotten around to it.
I know. It's been one of those episodes that we knew we were going to do it, but just never could find a good place for it. Good time for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually we had planned an interview for this episode, and we just couldn't quite wrangle that together in time. And right. We thought, you know what? We've been thinking about doing this episode for a while, so let's jump on that.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll be discussing a couple different aspects of animals. We'll start with a little bit of the superstition and folklore surrounding animals and magic, and then we'll talk a little bit about shapeshifting, a little bit about familiars. And then we'll get into some specific animals.
Yeah.
So, should be fun. Huzzah! All right. So, where should we start?
Let's talk about some common animal signs and superstitions that people have. And
okay. We talked a little about that before.
Yeah, in our omens episode.
Mm-hmm. But other than weather omens and weather signs, what are some things that you know about animals?
The first one that comes to mind, well, the first two are really common. Obviously, it's bad luck for a black cat to cross your path. You know, that's obvious. And the other one is it's bad luck to kill a spider
in your
home. Yeah.
Yeah. Both of those have to do with with basic luck, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard, and you made a good point of this being from an Asian culture, probably, killing a cricket indoors is bad luck as well. So I don't know. I guess you're supposed to let your house get infested with insects, but no.
I try to shoo them outside, like mm-hmm. Catch them in a cup and mm-hmm. then toss them out.
Yeah, I do that with most things. The insect that I make the exception for is millipedes and centipedes.
Yeah.
I can't deal with millipedes. Actually, not as bad because those aren't poisonous usually. But centipedes can be poisonous, and so I'm always real iffy about being around them.
Well, I've said before, I make the exception for poisonous spiders.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's a wolf spider or just a small
spider,
then I don't. It doesn't bother me as bad, and I can just toss it outside. But if it's a fiddleback, brown recluse. Or a black widow, which we have around here, then mm-hmm. you're going down the toilet.
There's one crawling on your head right now. I would have a hard time picking a brown recluse out from certain types of garden spiders. So generally I still try to dump those outside.
Yeah.
But black widows.
See, I err on the side of caution. If I'm not sure and it looks like it could be a brown recluse, mm-hmm. I go ahead and kill it.
Usually my thinking is brown recluses tend not to come out into visible. I usually won't see a brown recluse because they don't tend to like coming out into light spaces.
That's true, hence the name.
Yeah.
But
now, if there's a spider crawling around in my shoe, well, we're gonna deal with that differently.
But anyway.
Some other animal signs. One I learned just today in doing some of the reading for the show was something about turkeys dancing before rainstorms.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
So that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then you told me something about turkeys that your dad told you?
Yeah, I've always grew up hearing that turkeys were, too stupid to come in from the rain. And, they would look up into it and drown
mm-hmm.
if the farmer didn't get them in time.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever heard that, but that's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not. That's just what I grew up hearing, under the context of, don't be a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is you don't have the sense God gave a goose. Because mm-hmm. apparently geese are supposed to be.
Geese are mean.
Geese are mean, but I mean, are they dumb though?
I don't know if geese are particularly stupid. I know that any encounter I've had with a goose has not ended with the goose, you know, killing me. So clearly, I'm higher up on the food chain than a goose. Yeah. What were some of the other animal signs we came across? The one that, again, I read it today in the research for the show, but it's one that I grew up hearing all the time, but just never, I don't know, I guess I had just not thought about it in a very long time until I read this. And I read this in Patrick Gaynor's, I believe it's Witches, Ghosts, and Signs, which I'll put a link to in the show notes. He has a lot of really good folk superstition from the Appalachians. But one of the things is, if a bird flies into your house, it's a sign of death to come shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
And I absolutely remember that. I remember hearing actually like maybe a This American Life story about Spalding Gray, maybe the writer, and how his wife, a bird flew into their home, the day he disappeared.
Oh.
And like how, like she had never thought about it, but like it connected to her. She realized there was a bird in her home and something seemed wrong about that. And that was the day she found out that he just disappeared. No one knew where he'd gone.
Hmm.
It's interesting. And I think about that. If I see like a bird in like a, you know, if you go to Walmart sometimes, mm-hmm. birds will be flying around indoors. And it always makes me a little uncomfortable because I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit unnatural. And maybe mm-hmm. that's why that superstition grew up around that. But then it makes you wonder about like people who keep birds as pets. Because mm-hmm. I grew up with pet birds. And...
Mm-hmm. But those are different. Those aren't wild birds flying in from outside.
No, they're not.
And I mean, there are certain birds like, I think they say, is it sparrows or finches maybe? If they build a nest in your eaves, the eaves of your house, it protects the house from lightning and fire.
Oh, that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard that one either.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there's, you know, a place for certain types of birds, but I think a single wild bird flying in through your window mm-hmm. is a bad omen. But it's also kind of a weirdly peaceful omen, too. I don't know. Birds are very peaceful to me.
Really?
Yeah. But that's just a personal thing. It's not a... I have nothing to back that up at all. No scholarly research. But, okay. So, you know, those are just some of the superstitious aspects of animal magic.
Mm-hmm.
And animals have been associated with magic and witchcraft for a long time.
Yes, a very long time.
and one of the ways that they keep popping up in witch stories has to do with shape-shifting. Witches are reputed to have this ability to turn into various animals. For example, the black cat murders that I did storytelling episode on during the Halloween season.
Right.
That has a witch who can turn into a black cat. And there are all sorts of tales about witches turning into different animals. There's a famous thing from Scotland with Isabel Gowdy, who is a well-known Scottish witch, who has the transformation charm, I shall go thee into a hare with sorrow and sighing and middle care, or I shall go in the devil's name, I till I come home again. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. it. Yeah. She's pointing it to it in a book, for those of you who cannot see this at home. And I've seen that pop up many, many times. But, you know, a transformation charm to turn into a hare.
Yeah, the book says, with this verse, Isabel Gowdy revealed a shape-shifting secret and freely given testimony during her trial for witchcraft in 1662.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she completely, she confessed without, she actually went to the magistrates and said, I'm a witch and here, let me tell you about it. And we have no record of any punishment for her for that, which is very interesting.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It says a widely accepted view at the time was that a witch could by incantation actually become an animal.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about that. Yeah, the shapeshifting. Well, first of all, what do you think it means to shapeshift?
Oh, that's a hard question for me.
Like, do you think that there is a physical transformation that people can undergo? Is there like a, do you think that maybe there have been witches at some point in time that have been able to slip their skins and put on the skins of animals? Or do you think there's something else to that?
I don't know. The skeptic in me has a really hard time swallowing that. But there's still like part of me that would believe it if I saw it. But for the most part, I'm like, no, they mean something else. They mean, you know, it's something.
Mm-hmm. Like maybe.
Metaphoric, something to be.
Connecting with that animal spirit of some kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Sarah at Forest Grove did something recently where she talked about the Isabel Gowdy charm, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think she may have made an interesting connection. This may actually be coming from somewhere else, and I may be confusing it. So, Sarah, if you're listening and I get this wrong, please feel free to correct me. But she was, I think, saying something about how in shamanic culture, sometimes they would wear the skins of animals.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you know, you do sort of take on a physical attribute of that animal. Mm-hmm. And somebody, you know, looking from the edge of the woods, you dancing around a fire in an animal skin might very well see you as turning into that animal.
I can definitely see that.
And the...
Well, isn't that how the riding on brooms was misinterpreted? Because you would kind of jump with a broom to sort of encourage the crops to grow and stuff like that. That's what I've always heard. Mm-hmm. I don't know the complete accuracy of that, but...
Yeah, and that may be a... like in one area, that's what a broom was used for. I mean, brooms are pretty broad,
right?
But just like animals,
right? You know? But I mean, it was rakes and hoes as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah, encouraging crops to grow by sort of leaping through the fields on brooms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's true, or at least has some factual basis.
Hopefully, I didn't just say that and it's total crap.
If it is, I'm sure we have astute listeners who will point that out, and that's fine. If it's not true, then you've made up a really interesting story.
Yes, I did. No, I'm sure I got it from somewhere. But anywho,
yeah,
there's been common misinterpretation of what witches are doing.
Right. So then taking it as more of a metaphorical thing, and honestly, I take it as a metaphorical thing too. Even though there's a piece of me that can kind of get into the idea of the witch actually like peeling off her skin and putting on another animal's body or something. Like, I don't know why, but I'm like, oh, I could see how that would work. And like, really, I can't.
Like, you hope it would.
Yeah. There's just that like creepy Tim Burton-esque part of myself. It's like, that'd be kind of cool. But no, in reality, I definitely think there's more of a, if not metaphorical, then sort of hedge crossing or shamanic
I kind of see it.
So why shapeshift, air quoting, into an animal?
The concealment factor, I suppose.
Okay, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm not sure I know what that
means. Well, I mean, we've always been sort of a secret, you know, type of, I don't want to say religion, but it's always been a secretive thing. And, you know, it helps you move around better, I would guess. And plus, it's more inconspicuous.
Well, okay, so, but I mean, that's, but I'm talking about it as a metaphor, right? So metaphorically.
Okay, see, I was
you're thinking like at literally.
It from, yeah.
Okay. So, but so literally, no, I can totally see like all the benefits of like being able to actually turn into a rabbit or a I don't see any benefits to turning into a rabbit. But turning into like a dog or a stag or something. But metaphorically, what's the benefit?
Well, they're animals. They don't have the same interactions. They don't have like our idea of culture. Like it's, I think it would be easier to sort of tap into the other side. Does that make sense?
No, that makes 100% sense.
Okay.
And I'll tell you two things that I think of when you make that point, which is an excellent point. One, and I think I heard this again through Sarah, but if you think about the old hunter-gatherer model, well, hunters depended on knowing how animals moved. They depended on knowing how herds moved, how herd interactions were, to understand their prey.
Right.
So having someone who could do that, who could put themselves into the mind of that animal and say, you know what, those animals are going to be at this watering hole in this valley tomorrow. And I know this because I'm thinking like that animal right now. And then the hunters go out and find those animals. That means that the tribe eats. So I can totally see that and having that otherworldly connection, while at the same time that the one who puts on that animal's spirit communes with them and sort of establishes a bond between that tribe and that animal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's a good point. And in a more modern context, do you remember that video that we talked about where the dog detects the earthquake like,
yes.
Like 10 seconds before anyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you can cross into that otherworldly space and become an animal in a sense,
that's what I was trying to say. They're more instinctual than we are.
and more in tune with yes. these unseen things that go on in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I can totally see that.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh, thanks. So what about you? I mean, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I think there's also an element of release that comes with putting on that animal self.
How so?
Humans have this really interesting social dynamic. And I think some other animals do too. But when we strip ourselves of that and sort of get to our more primal selves, which we can do by this sort of shape-shifting technique, when we connect with these animals, we get in touch with that wilder side of ourself. And that wilder side of ourself is the more fearless mm-hmm. and instinctual side. And that's where a lot of good magic comes from, is fearlessness and instinct.
Yes, agree. Definitely agree, 100%.
So I can see that connecting in a witchcraft way.
So why these certain animals, though? Like, why cats? Why hares? Why crows?
Well, I don't know. Well, we'll probably get into those specifically when we talk about the individual animals.
Right.
But why are there certain animals that are witchy and certain animals
yeah.
that aren't?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't know. What do you have any thoughts on that?
Not any, except ones based off of, you know, it's what I think. I mean, cats just sort of seem otherworldly, you know? They just always have.
Right.
To me.
Well, you look at ancient Egyptian religion.
Exactly. And, you know, you wonder if that's kind of filtered down throughout the years or mm-hmm. or what. I don't know.
Well, no, there's a really good point. Let's look at that briefly. What are some of the main animals that were worshipped as deities or that shared their attributes with humans back in, you know, ancient Egypt, which is one of the oldest religions mm-hmm. that we've got any evidence for? You had cats.
Yes.
You had falcons and ibises, which are birds. Mm-hmm. So those are very witchy. You had jackals, types of dogs, mm-hmm. wild dogs especially. Was there a horse, the hippo?
I know there was a hippo and another was an alligator.
Okay.
Or well, I guess a crocodile.
Yeah, alligators or crocodiles. Those still have strong, maybe not witchy connotations, but for folks in the South, you got the gator heads and the swamp magicians really do touch base with those alligators.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that maybe there's some connection there. That's all speculative, by the way. This is not like your 20-minute guide to Egyptology and anthropology. but you know, it's worth looking at that connection. So what else? What else might make certain animals witchy and certain animals, like, what are some animals that are definitely not witchy?
I would say like most domesticated dogs now, I wouldn't really consider.
Except black dogs. I think black dogs are still very.
But big black dogs, like you wouldn't mm-hmm. consider a chihuahua to be.
Well, yeah. I'm sure some people do. Like, that's, you know, some people's familiar is their chihuahua. But
well, I had a chihuahua for a very long time, and I adore that breed. But I don't really.
You don't see the magic of that species particularly.
Not really.
That's fair enough.
I don't know that. I was watching a documentary the other day. It's on Netflix.
It's called Beverly Hills Chihuahua. Because that's not really a documentary. Even though it's clearly shot that way.
You bastard. No. It was put out by PBS. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name. But it was about dogs and how they've kind of evolved with humans and, you know, just different bits of research that they've done about them and how, you know, they've come to, they really are man's best friend because, you know, we can, they did studies and there were like six different types of barks that we can mm-hmm. identify, while their close relative, you know, gray wolves, they bark for warning and they howl, mm-hmm. while, you know, dogs have the happy greeting bark and they have the playful bark and the warning bark and, you know, don't leave me, the kind of whine, mm-hmm. bark, the yip type of deal. And, you know, so, you know, they've evolved this to be with humans. And they did studies with chimps where, like, they would point to two different cups and one had food under it. And they wouldn't show the chimp which one had food, but they would point to the one. And the chimp just didn't even care. Like, it would go for the cup it wanted to go for. Mm-hmm. While the dog, you could point. And so the dog has learned over the years to know what pointing is. Hmm. And she even did a study where she would, like, just look at it. And, you know, because of our almond eyes, you know, and the whites show, mm-hmm. it could see where you were, quote unquote pointing just mm-hmm. with your eyes, and the dog would go for that like 9 times out of 10. And so even as puppies, they were doing this.
Hmm. It's an instinctual thing.
Yes, like they've actually, you know, studied it. It's genetic. It's not
very interesting.
Yeah, like I'll tell you more about it later. It's a really cool documentary. If you have a chance to watch it, you should. If you like dogs, but so I guess my point is that like now that I'm thinking about it, there kind of is a connection to them. Like yeah. I feel very close to my dogs. Like they know when I'm upset. They know when I'm happy. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I'm ever sick or really sad, like when my dad died, you mm-hmm. know. They
know.
They did not leave me, you know?
Yeah.
They were right there.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, I mean, cats as independent and as aloof as they mm-hmm. are, they exhibit a lot of those same traits. They don't exhibit them in the terms of loyalty and friendship and everything.
Right.
But they are sensitive to human emotions. Mm-hmm. Like, if you walk into a room and you're angry, you don't even see the cat. It knows to be out of your way.
Yeah.
But if you walk into a room and you're in a really relaxed, calm mood, the second you sit down, there's a cat magically on your lap, curled up as though it has always been there.
Yeah.
So cats are, I think, in tune with people in that way too.
Yeah. Okay. So back to the original question, what are mm-hmm. some animals that are not witchy?
Yeah. Non-witchy animals, giraffes, generally, I don't think of as witchy. Then again, maybe people who interact with giraffes on a regular basis.
Yeah, maybe. I just think there's something about animals that like when you're with them, they just, like most tame animals, mm-hmm. people just feel a connection to.
I don't know. It's really hard for me to come up with a good example of an animal that's not, that could not be witchy. Like I was thinking of raccoons. Raccoons don't strike me as a particularly witchy animal myself. But in research today, I came across a story about a witch who could transform into a raccoon, which you don't usually hear.
Well, and they use the penis bones and hoodoo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, every animal seems to have its place in magic. If you have animals that you're fairly sure are not witchy, we'd love to hear that because mm-hmm. we're having trouble coming up with them.
Yeah. Maybe we should have thought about this a little bit more.
Yeah. Clearly. Well, many like bugs. I'm sure some people be like, oh, bugs are gross and nasty. But no, there are tons of... There was a witch in England who kept a beetle... little black beetle in a bottle, and that was her familiar.
Really?
And she would let it out and let it crawl around and ask it questions, and like she could interact with that beetle just as well as some people interact with a dog.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So, I mean, bugs, I think, can be very witchy. I tend not to think slugs.
Mm, yeah.
But, you know, they do dissolve when you pour salt on them, and salt is kind of witchy, so maybe that's...
They're evil.
Yes, I will attest to that. They're pretty awful. Aphids. I've never seen a lot of aphid spells. But, I mean, that's getting into microscopic levels.
I'm trying to think of... What about, like, cows? A lot of people keep cows.
Oh, yeah, cows are deeply magical. Think about, if you look at the Táin Bó Cúaillí, which is the Irish... one of the big stories of Irish mythology, it's all about a sacred cow that has been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. And there's some sacred cows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not all that weird to have pretty much any kind of animal that humans have regularly interacted with. We've found a way to make it magical.
Right.
Or found something magical about it.
Right. Or some way to use it in magic if, you know.
Yeah.
There's Apis, the bull god of procreativity.
Hmm.
It's worshipped in Memphis, Egypt's ancient capital city.
Oh, Memphis, Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt.
It's like, I know they have a lot of barbecue in Memphis, but I don't think it's worshipped. Well, and yeah, and then in, was it Crete?
Oh, Isis took on aspects of a cow.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And then you had Io, who was, I believe, transformed into a white bull or a white heifer. And then, yeah, was it the Minoans that had the bull dancing cult where like acrobats would like a bull would charge around the ring and acrobats would do flips and leaps over the bull, like putting one hand on the head and flipping over its back. And if you've ever read a book called The King Must Die by Mary Renault, then she talks a good bit about that practice. And that's actually where bullfighting comes from. Is that bull dancing that they used to do. For some reason, somebody thought, well, when we're done with the dancing, we should stab it.
Yeah.
And turned it into a blood sport. So, yeah, there's definitely cow magic.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You know, since we're already diving into it, do you want to just go into some of the different animals?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right.
Mixing it up.
We're mixing it up. It's not according to our plan, but we're crazy like that. We're living fearless. We're invoking the crazy animal spirit of the podcasting monkey. I don't really know if there's a podcasting monkey.
We can only hope.
We need a mascot. Okay, so let's look at some of these animals. Lane has this beautiful chapbook, which was released by the Witch's Almanac publishing house, and written by Elizabeth Pepper and Barbara Stacey. I don't know Barbara Stacey, but I know Elizabeth Pepper is a very well regarded magical scholar.
We're going to bought this book years and years ago.
I love it. I had never seen it until tonight, and I'm just. It Lance, where she showed it to me, but I don't think she'd still have it if she had. Because I love this thing. And it's nothing but animal magic. Yeah, it's called Magical Creatures.
Mm-hmm, it has tame animals, wild animals, and then it goes into the fantastic, like, you know, chimera, dragons, unicorns, stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk a little bit about the fantastic creatures at some point, too. Well, before we dive into more of these animals, let's take a really quick break. We'll play a couple of promos, and we'll be back, and we'll start going through our actual list of animals.
You've crossed the ocean and entered the new world with Corey and Lane on their down-home show, New World Witchery. Once you've gotten to the point where you can't tell hoodoo from Scooby-Doo, trade in the dirt and dolls for a torch and pitchfork, and come join me, Firelight, at Inciting a Riot, the podcast. We'll be inciting all sorts of riots in areas such as religion, mainstream news, and living a modern, magical middle-class life. You can find the riot at incitingariot.com or through iTunes. But for now, get back to Corey and Lane before they take me to the crossroads. Those two can do some crazy things with some paperclips, chicken bones, and two-day-old donuts. Do not cross them.
Hi, this is Kathleen, the hostess of Borealis Meditation, Geology for Pagans. Geology is the study of the Earth, so what better subject for pagans? Join me to learn about minerals, rocks, and other interesting facts and theories about the Earth. I can be found at Podbean, on iTunes, and Podcast Alley, or just come on over to the blog at borealismeditation.blogspot.com.
Butterflies.
They can be magical. They transform.
That's true.
All right. So, okay, we've talked a little bit about cats, a little bit about dogs, a little bit about cattle, geese. Well, no, you look at it, she's making a funny, like, geese. There's no way they're magic. Mother goose.
That's true.
Mm.
And, no, never mind.
No, Frau Holla, the goose goddess in Teutonic mythology, who's often considered an inspiration for Mother Goose.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely some magic there. All right. Well, we've got some others. Geese. That's all the geese I've got. So you're actually.
Yeah, no. That's,
I don't know much else.
Well, we can see what it has to say here.
World of magical geese. Yeah, there's not a whole heck of a lot else about geese. There's a good bit of mythology that's goose related. All right. Goats definitely have.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been the scapegoat in. Hebrew practice, mm-hmm. where, oh gosh, I wish I had the Bible right in front of me right now so I could find that passage.
Something you don't often hear on a pagan podcast.
I wish I had the Bible in front of me right now so I could look up this magical thing. I'm serious. Like, the more I look at that book, and I told my wife about this tonight, I was like, the more I look at that book, the more I'm like, this thing is a grimoire. This thing is a book of magic.
We need to have an episode on the Bible, actually.
It'd be all about
you talking, but and I'd be like, really? Oh, okay.
It would probably be me talking and you going, no. Oppression and hate.
No.
But in the... There's a passage about what they're to do every year, what the Jews are to do every year. This is Old Testament, I believe. And they are to kill one goat as a typical blood sacrifice, because that was part of the process of worshiping Yahweh back in ancient Hebrew magical religious practice. But then there's this other goat, which they send out into the wilderness, which is the desert, basically. They don't know what happens to it. But it's not that they're sending it out into the... It's not that they're just sending it out into the wilderness willy-nilly for no reason. They're sending it out as a specific sacrifice to a demon. Like, to a specific demon. I think it's Azazel. This fallen angel demon that lives out in the wilderness.
Really?
And it's the scapegoat that's supposed to take all the sins of the tribe and go and be destroyed by this demon.
Well, it's a good thing they don't do that anymore.
I know, but isn't that like, you're just like, wait, that's in what book? Oh, the Bible. All right. I never heard that part of it. But it's very, very interesting stuff. Anyway, so that's... So goats also, of course, you have the...
There's a lot of negative connotation around goats now.
Yeah, people like to see them as diabolical.
Yeah, it's kind
satanic.
Of unfortunate.
And they're really cool animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're great at, like, if you have marijuana growing on your property that you don't want growing on your property, they will eat it for you. I know that's a weird thing to say, but okay, I lived on a farm.
Right.
And the thing about having a farm with enough acreage is people will find parts of your acreage that you're not using because you just don't get to it.
Right.
That's wild. They will clear it and they will plant marijuana on your land because if it gets found, it's your responsibility because you own that land. And they'll go in and they'll harvest it, but then, like, it's your responsibility if the law comes and finds it. And usually cops are pretty good about knowing, like, if you're actually growing it or if it's something that's like, well, no, clearly you just don't go out to that part of your property and somebody's growing it and they'll just burn the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you happen to find it and you just don't want to get tangled up in it, you could let goats loose and they'll eat it all up.
Huh.
So, and that was fairly common out in the part of the country where I was living. So
interesting.
It's not really magical, I guess.
No.
Kind of magical for the goats. They had a great time. They were seeing all sorts of witchy stuff. Like, whoa, he's really flying on a broom. Anyway.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah. So that's goats. Birds. Lots of bird stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can fly. They're kind of between the worlds in that way, so.
Good call. And their feathers. I mean, we use feathers in mm-hmm. magic a lot.
Yes.
Do you think there's a difference? Like, they list hawks and falcons as tame. And I don't tend to think of hawks and falcons. Well, they used to be tamed for, like, hunting purposes.
Yeah.
But I don't tend to think of them as tame, and I really, like, don't think of them as magical as things like crows and ravens.
Yeah, I see crows and ravens way more.
So I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
And likewise, you know, they list roosters and peacocks and things like that.
Those are more farm. That doesn't mean they're tame, though, necessarily.
Mm, that's true. Yeah, I've met some roosters that were definitely not tame in my time.
Mm.
But I do know that they have magical qualities in hoodoo. Having a frizzly, it's called a frizzly black rooster, which is a big, or a frizzly black frizzly hen. You have one of those kind of sort of big feathered birds, and they scratch up hoodoo tricks around your property so that they can't hurt you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Effectively canceling out negative magic done against you. Horses?
Yeah. We've talked about horses before a teeny bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't want to forget that.
I don't know.
But we were saying, you know, they've been so useful for man for so long that, mm-hmm. of course, they're going to sort of get into the magical realm.
Mm-hmm. Jillian over at Iron Powak works with them a lot.
Really?
And she's, yeah, that's her big thing. She's really into horses.
See, I was never one of the little girls who wanted a pony. I had enough dogs. Mm-hmm. But we did grow up, you know, fairly rural. And there was a horse grazing, you know, field across the street from us. And I would go over and pet this one horse that these people, that our neighbors had. And he was so sweet. You know, he'd eat apples and carrots from us. And yeah, he was just a really gentle animal. And mm-hmm. I've always liked them. Never like, you know, the crazy kind of.
Right.
Like in an animal type of people. But I don't know. I just thought they were pretty cool.
And they definitely have this other sense about them. Like, you think about horse whisperers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can really communicate with people in a way that not a lot of other animals can.
Yeah.
I mean, cows definitely, you know, you don't have a whole lot of cow whisperers.
No.
But horses are sort of special. And the thing is, like, you can domesticate a horse and it can be real friendly with you and everything like that. But it's never domesticated the way a dog or a cat is.
Right.
It's always bigger than you. It's always more powerful than you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely an inherent magic in horses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there's any stories. I don't think there's any stories of shape-shifting into horses that I can think of. But if you think of some, listeners, and want to share those with us, I'd love to hear them. I don't, like I said, know of any off the top of my head. I do know that there are
goddesses.
Goddesses.
But, like, I'm thinking just plain, just witchy.
Yeah, and I can't think of anything. Although I have this weird image in my head of, like, there may be a story about a witch and a boy who had his head turned into a horse's head. So he was just a boy with a horse's head. Oh, well, and then there's the story of the goose girl. There's geese again. Whose horse, this girl, this is a Brothers Grimm fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
This girl was sort of cheated out of her inheritance by this wicked stepmother type figure. And so she became this goose tending girl. Like, she was, it was her job to take care of the geese. But before she'd had this really beautiful, wonderful horse, well, the stepmother killed the horse and mounted its head on the pen where the geese were kept. Aww. As a reminder to the goose girl that she had to keep quiet. And she could never tell, like, she was put under this magical thing where she couldn't tell anybody about what had happened. But then she started talking to the horse's head, and the horse's head started talking back. And so, like, she was able to tell it the story, and the horse's head was able to talk back, and someone overheard it, and everything came out.
Oh.
And so that's how it all gets revealed, and the stepmother gets caught and punished in some pretty brutal ways, actually. But
thanks, Grim.
Yeah. Appropriately named. Yeah, I think she's put in a barrel full of spikes and dragged around. I mean, it's pretty, but the thing is, like, she chooses that punishment because the king, who knows the whole story at this point, is at this banquet with the queen and sort of brings it up, like, you know, what if this horrible thing happened? What would be the right punishment for that? And she's like, oh, it would be this thing. And he keeps going through these things, and finally he names exactly the scenario of the goose girl. And he says, well, what queen would be your punishment for that? She's like, oh, they should be put in a barrel full of spikes and drug around. And they're like, strip her naked, throw her in the barrel.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's real pleasant.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, horses definitely. I've always found sheep to be sort of enchanting creatures.
They're sweet. They're just,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're a herd animal though. They're a little dumb.
They are dumb. There is a little bit of an otherworldly thing to them. In terms of they pop up a lot metaphorically. Like, you think about, again, biblically. There's always the reference to shepherding and mm-hmm. being sheep and all that. And you think about one of the most prominent, maybe not witch gods, but certainly sort of wild pagan gods is Pan.
Yeah.
Who is constantly associating with shepherds.
Oh.
Shepherds have this, because they live out close to the land. They live out having to watch for signs of, like, wolves coming over the horizon and things. So they're really in tune with nature in that same way. So I think sheep have it. They're not quite as magical as some other creatures, but they certainly have an otherworldly charm to them.
Yeah. They're charming animals.
Mm-hmm. And then swine. Is it pigs?
I don't know about that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the great witch goddesses, Ceridwen, had a cauldron that would constantly regenerate. Like, she would put pigs into the cauldron, they would regenerate, so you could keep eating them, basically. Yeah. It was this, like, never-ending pork buffet.
Yeah, I don't really like pork.
Yeah. And then in the Bible, the demon legion, Jesus casts the demon right. legion into the herd of swine. They right. go off the cliff. It's been a very Bible-heavy episode, folks.
Yes, it has.
I apologize.
Pigs are really intelligent. Mm-hmm. They've done studies, and supposedly they are, you know, smarter than certain breeds of dogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And they, I don't know, like, people make goats out to be kind of the diabolical critters.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought pigs are right on that cusp. Like, they can go either way. You push a pig the wrong way. You know, he's like 51% piglet, 49% Amityville horror pig. You know?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, I think pigs are are definitely one of those animals to, you know, keep an eye on. I don't sleep around pigs too well.
Okay, I feel like we're getting off topic here.
Fair enough. All right, well, why don't you do some of the wild creatures?
Okay, well, of course it lists rabbits and hares, which we all know. I like the bunnies.
We all know bunnies are evil.
Well, it's I've always wanted kind of a chance to explain that. I grew up, and my mom would always like give me rabbit stuff. Actually, I still own some of my stuffed animals. I still have three of them, and they were from various points in my life. And the first one I got when I was 3 years old. I've had him ever since. And it was a rabbit. I got it for Easter that year. And, you know, I had, like, jewelry boxes and necklaces and, I don't know, I just always had rabbit stuff. And it wasn't like she tried. It was, you know, like, it wasn't like a theme that she always bought me. It just kind of randomly happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was really getting into witchcraft, I, you know, sort of read about the, you know, kind of how they can be a magical animal. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I've always liked them. And it just, I don't know, it just sort of made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has that double level mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, clearly they're a witchy animal. The Isabel Gowdy rhyme specifically says, I'm going to become a hare.
Mm-hmm.
So good call.
Yeah, and we use their feet for luck and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And then the thing that you always talk about with the full moon.
Yeah, they dance under a full moon. And I don't know if it's like, you know, waltzing or anything, but, you know, they do.
No, they do the bunny hop, clearly.
But, you know, they'll come out.
And, yeah, they'll get up on their hind legs and kind of move around.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see.
Very.
We have a lot of rabbits, wild rabbits in my neighborhood.
We do, too.
And I've seen them, like, I'll go out for runs at night and I'll see them. You know, they'll be, you know, out in the field, and you can see them kind of standing up out in the fields on full moon nights.
Really?
It's really interesting.
Yeah. And so. And there's the story of the Velveteen Rabbit,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I read growing up, and I read Watership Down when I was fairly young. And, you know, so I've just always had kind of rabbits in my consciousness. And so when I read and found out they were a magical animal, that they just kind of stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
So... that's my explanation for that.
Or, what are some others?
Deer. I've always found deer to be quite magical as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're also really common around here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Corey and I have talked about before. We like what we know. And, you know, deer and rabbits are in abundance here. So.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, the deer here are to the point where they will be within... you know, 20 feet of you without blinking an eye. They're
mm-hmm.
fine. They're pretty much fine
yeah.
with being around people. But I mean, there's something, there are certain animals that resonate in a weird way with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I never would have thought deer because I'm not a hunter. You know, I've never had to go out and bag a buck or anything like that. I grew up around a lot of people who did, and I don't have a problem with it necessarily. But anytime I've encountered deer, especially, you know, outside of a car or something like that, it's always had this real resonance for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the time that I went to the crossroads and I saw
right.
that deer come out of the forest, I, you know, it was as though the thing were looking at me and really not speaking to me, but just sort of acknowledging my presence. And that's a very strange feeling to have from an animal that wild.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, there are stories about, you know, which is turning into deer
mm-hmm.
that are not all that uncommon, especially white deer.
Yeah.
It's very common. Auntie Greenleaf up in the New York State area. There's a story about her. She's a witch that would turn into a deer.
Hmm.
Okay, what are some others?
Frogs and toads.
Oh, I love me some frogs and toads.
Of course. Well, those are always, you know, getting turned into a frog or a toad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, no witch is worth his or her salt if you can't turn a handsome prince into a frog every once in a while. So if you haven't done that, you're not a witch. I'm telling you, that's criteria number one. Well, I mean, those are definitely otherworldly animals. They can live between two realms, land and water.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hecate is thought to derive from the Egyptian goddess Hecate, which was a toad goddess.
Hmm.
So she had the head of a toad. So, they've been around a long time and deeply associated with magic. There's the toad bone ritual, which is similar to the black cat bone ritual, which we've discussed before.
Yes.
Which involves finding a magical bone in a toad's body. And then there was a whole organization in England at one point called the Toadsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronald Hutton talks about this in his book, The Triumph of the Moon. And the Toadsmen were sort of like Freemasons, only they had this ritual that was, instead of based on this Kabbalistic mythology, it was based on like this this toad rite.
Huh.
It was very interesting. And they would learn these special words of power.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Owls?
Yeah. That's always been another one for me that I've kind of liked for a long time because, you know, Athena is associated with owls. That was mm-hmm. one of her special animals. And
mm-hmm. They're nocturnal.
Yeah, they have big eyes, so I guess you get the sense of, yeah, they see.
And they can turn their heads almost in a mm-hmm. complete circle, so they see all. And there's a very sort of, like, omniscient quality to an owl.
Yeah.
Wise quality.
Yeah, I mean, even, like, you know, Winnie the Pooh, owl is mm-hmm. the smart one, you know, they all go to mm-hmm. for advice and things like that. So I think it's in our consciousness that, you know, owls are wise.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as witchy stuff goes, I mean, you know, being able to be wise, see in the dark, you know, travel by night,
mm-hmm.
all very witchy
yes.
qualities. What else?
Spiders. Again, spiders. You get the Greek, mm-hmm. where Athena turned Ariadne into the spider because of her, you know, she challenged her with her weaving. And we have the superstition not to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's... I don't know, there are all sorts of magical things, I think, that come with spiders. Like, we've seen spider eggs can be used in certain hoodoo spells.
Yes, we have.
Rather unsavory and have been discussed in previous episodes. but then, I mean, anything where you need sort of a poison quality to magical working, spiders can be incorporated into that. And likewise, anything where you're trying to sort of weave a web to catch something.
Mm-hmm.
Again, spiders really work. Metaphorically. I definitely don't want to skip over...
Snakes. Yeah. Snakes. That's a big one. I think we're going to be having more Bible talk here, people.
I actually am going to just sort of bypass that and say that when we talk about the Bible, I will really get into my discussion of the snake and why I really like the snake in the Bible. But I will say that the snake, if you look at a lot of different mythologies throughout the world, it has a very deeply chthonic... underworld power.
Mm-hmm.
It can slip into the earth and come back out. Some of them are poisonous. You know, you have snake charmers. There's just, they show up everywhere.
Yeah.
And I love them for that. There was something, actually, this is something I think you'll find very, very interesting. I was looking at the Foxfire book, and there's a whole section on snake lore in it. And one of the things that I read was about a fella who dealt with snakes on farmland up in the Appalachians quite a bit. And the quote about him is, about this one person is, they never have been a snake try to bite yet. You can have one man out there in the yard and I can walk out the door and tell him to lay down and he will lay down on the ground flat. I can take an axe and walk right up and chop off his head. I've done that many a time. So, sort of horse whispering, but with snakes.
Yeah.
What does it make you think of?
It makes me think of the snake handlers.
Oh, well, snake handling churches. Yeah, absolutely.
With like the very...
backwoods.
Yes.
Yeah. Backwoods Christian tiny churches where mm-hmm. they drink the poison and they handle the snakes.
Yes, because of a particular verse that mm-hmm. says... I don't even know what it says, but it's
near the end of Matthew, I think. And it talks about they shall take up poisonous serpents and not be harmed. They shall drink poison. And
right.
Yeah. And it's all about having a certain amount of faith.
Right. So they think, you know, if you have enough faith to do that, then prove it pretty much.
I'm so surprised that's where you went and not to parcel tongue.
That's just what I thought of. I don't know. But yeah, I could see that too. The parcel tongue thing.
Yeah. There you go. So
everybody's got Harry Potter on the brain.
Well, gee, I wonder why. But I just think that snakes, like I said, I'm not going to get into the whole like pseudo-biblical side of it. But I think that snakes, like Dembala Wedo and Voodoo, is sort of considered one of the big gods, or the big Loa father god figures, and he's a snake. Mm-hmm. Just a big giant snake. And so snakes have always had this very, very powerful connection to magic and religion. And yes. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, something to look at in the future, definitely.
Yeah, I've done a post on snakes, actually, on the blog before, and sort of tapped a little bit of these. But I just, they really appeal to me in this very weird way.
Cool.
And they have been more and more lately. But anyway,
it's just definitely me. A future episode, then.
Indeed. I think I'm becoming a Slytherin. Cool.
Okay, so do you want to talk about familiars a little bit?
Yes, let's do that.
So, okay, what is a familiar to you?
I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I've never considered like a pet a familiar.
I haven't either. I know some people do. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, a familiar is always depicted as an animal with almost human intelligence. You know, to be able to do your bidding or help you, or even like increase the intensity of whatever spell you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how does that transfer into the real world, into what we actually do?
Well,
like, since I've never used one, how do people who do have familiars, like, how do they use them? How do they?
Well, I know that it used to be thought that they were the imps of the witch, those imps were given to the witch at the time that she initiated mm-hmm. and signed the pact with the devil. And so the devil would give her these specific imps that would take on animal or semi-animal forms, and live with the witch and do the witch's bidding. And that was how a large portion of her magic was done, was sending these things out to do her bidding. And I think that confuses two concepts. That confuses the concept of the fetch, which is sort of your magical other self, which can, we've sort of touched on that a time or two, and you and I have talked about it.
Yeah.
A good bit.
Yeah. But not on the podcast.
Not on the podcast. That'll be some, we're just full of teasers today.
Yes, we are.
I love it. Naughty. That was awful. God. So the fetch is the sort of other self that works in the other world and does sort of do your magical work in a way. But the familiar is, what Judica Isles says about it, is a familiar is a specific individual creature with whom you have established a psychic bond, which I think is a good way to put it. If you have animals that you have, I don't want to call it unnatural in terms of like, you got an unnatural relationship with his dog. Like, things you can see on the internet for $9.95 a minute, but you probably don't want to.
Not that type of unnatural.
Not that type of unnatural. But think about, like, people who can have wild birds come eat out of their hand. Or people who have a dog that will follow them from room to room and will never leave them alone. Like, they're deeply tied. And it's not just a matter of, they're lonely, but it's more of a, they're there to protect you,
mm-hmm.
or they're there to be with you because they have a bond with you. And I think that's got to be an intentional thing. I think you have to intentionally cement that bond. It can be natural up to a point, but at some point you have to sort of cement it as a magical relationship.
Okay.
That's my opinion though. What do you think?
I don't know. I honestly do not know. I've never, obviously never had one or never really thought about having one because for the longest time it just seemed sort of kind of cliche and a little bit silly in mm-hmm. a way.
No,
like before I don't know.
It seems, for lack of a better term, and I know this is a term that people hate, but it seems kind of fluffy.
A little bit.
To say, you know, this is my can't name a dog breed without thinking of someone who'll be offended if I name their dog breed a dachshund. I don't know anyone with a dachshund right now. Like, this is my dachshund Fritz, and he is my familiar. Well, why is he your familiar? Well, because he's my dog. Well, it's not really the same thing. He's your pet.
Right.
It's a very different thing.
Yeah. That's not to say anybody who has, I mean, I think differently now, but for such a long time, it just mm-hmm. seemed, like I said, silly to me mm-hmm. because it's, you know, like, that's one of the mainstream things mm-hmm. about, you know, quote-unquote bad witches. You know, they have their familiar that does their evil bidding. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it wasn't something I really thought about as being real witchcraft.
Right. I could see that.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, there's this concept of the power animal.
Mm-hmm.
Or the animal spirit guide that a lot of people get into,
mm-hmm.
Where they form a psychic bond with an animal, and a lot of times it's an animal they never have met or never would meet for
right.
whatever reason.
Like a wolf or
right.
a tiger or something like that.
Right. And I don't think that's the same thing as a familiar. I think that
no,
that's,
I don't either.
I think that that's just sort of, it's sort of a way to tap into some aspect of your personality.
I can see that.
But if you're not really, like, getting back to that whole idea of the shamanic journey done in the hunter-gatherer societies, those weren't necessarily hunters. Like, you know, you don't have a hunter in Siberia who's trying to imagine what it's like to be a rhino. Because there's no point to it.
Mm-mm.
But they would try to think maybe how to be a wolf. And because they encounter wolves, wolves are a part of their life.
Right.
And so in that capacity, I think that a wolf might become a familiar in that the shaman or witch would interact with it in some way. It's a half-formed thought, but...
I just don't know.
I just tend to think, like, a familiar has to be an animal you interact with
mm-hmm.
in the real world.
Yeah, in the physical world.
Physical world. And it's more than just a pet. And honestly, I tend to think, like, the ideal familiar is one that you don't try to get.
Agreed.
It's one that shows up. It's one that just shows up in your world. And particularly, it's one maybe that comes from the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have a deer that visits you every day. And, you know, you leave food out for it and you develop this relationship with it. At some point, maybe you interact with it in this interesting way. Well, you might actually have a familiar there if you form a bond with it.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, you could probably take in a stray dog.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a very interesting dog that exhibits some unusual behavior, I would say maybe it's magically bonded to you.
Yeah.
So, but I think you have to really look at that honestly and not just be like, you know, I found a stray puppy on the side of the road and I took it in, I'm feeding it, and now it's my familiar. I think there has to be more to it than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't know. I feel like I'm coming off maybe like as a... Like, this is how it is, and you have to follow my way.
No, I hope we don't come off sounding snobby or elitist or anything like that. Like, oh, anyone who has a familiar, blah, blah, blah. But because I don't think like that. It's just, mm-hmm. like I said, I don't know much about it. And I don't know. I don't really know what to say
mm-hmm.
about it anymore.
Yeah. I think we've pretty well covered it.
Yeah.
Did you want to cover any of the fantastic creatures or... You know what? Let's save those. I think those would be interesting if we ever do a show that's sort of about like the fantasy aspect of
yeah,
witchcraft.
Yeah.
That would be a fun place to tap into that.
I agree.
And the place for like imagination in witchcraft.
Let's leave that for later.
That sounds good. All right. We'll take another little break here. And then on the other side of that, you're going to be telling us how to make a specific magical potion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. I'm excited.
Me too.
All right.
Jed here. This season at Radiolab, we take big ideas, like...
Time.
The evolution of consciousness.
Psychological stress.
The little man curled up in the cell.
Red rumps.
And we poke at them.
I like how you say red rumps.
From 100 different directions until they start to giggle, sigh, and then tell us something.
Secrets.
Where do we find the rule?
I find secrets.
But where is it?
So this is Witchcraft, and today we're going to be talking about how to make black cat oil. And I decided to do this this oil for this episode because it uses the hair of a black cat, and it also has two very different uses, which I found pretty interesting. So what you need is either essential oil of sage or just the dried crumbled sage, essential oil of bay laurel or dried crushed bay leaves, essential oil of myrrh or solid myrrh resin, a bit of steel wool, and fine iron shot. So I was not quite sure what that was. I had to ask Corey, and he explained to me.
Yes, it's sort of like when you have a shotgun shell.
Mm-hmm.
So you really could just do this by getting a shotgun shell and breaking it open. But if you have not a lower gauge, but a smaller gauge of a shotgun, and you break it open, the smaller beads of that shotgun are what you're looking for, the little tiny metal balls.
So kind of like a BB.
Yeah. You really probably could use BBs, and honestly, I bet you could use iron filings.
I was just about to say, you could probably just use iron. Yeah. It's probably just for the iron, not necessarily for the shot aspect of it.
Yeah, just any kind of crumbled iron would be fine.
Right. So,
Oh, we need to say where this is coming from, by the way.
Oh, yeah, this is from the Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells. Of course, by Utica Elish. So, you also need some of the hair of a black cat. And depending on your use of what you want to do with this black cat oil, you want sweet almond oil or castor or mineral oil. Now, the sweet almond oil is for the positive use, and the castor oil is for well, they're both positive, but...
But one is for love magic and one is for curse breaking.
Yes.
So.
There we go. So, when you mix it with the castor oil, it's used to break bad spells and hexes. And I would assume you would anoint yourself with it, or maybe a mojo bag of some sort.
Do a candle burning. Like a double reversing candle.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
And then the sweet almond oil used to attract positive attention from the opposite sex. So, again, anointing or a candle burning of some sort.
Yeah.
Or maybe just have the vial with you. And
depending on how it smells, honestly, with bay sage and myrrh in it, it's going to have a pretty it's going to have an interesting smell. It's not going to be... floral or sweet. It's
especially with that almond oil.
Yeah.
But I like the way almond oil smells.
Yeah, I do too. It's definitely going to be a stronger, not quite musky, but it, you know,
different.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be redolent of a bedchamber in a way. Like it's not musky, but it's going to have sort of a sweet sweat smell, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. I mean, if you're looking for something that makes you think of sex.
Yep. Yeah. So, that's pretty much it, you know, just add it all together, and
you probably would want to cold infuse it, right? You're not heating anything.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you would put it into the jar with all the ingredients and the oil, and shake it up, and let it sit for a couple weeks, shaking it up every day.
Yep.
Get yourself some nice black cat oil.
That's right.
All right.
So, okay, but let's talk about that a little bit. Like, why would you use the hair of the black cat?
And the love spell that makes... Well, in both spells, it really makes some degree of sense to me.
Okay.
The love spell, there's the whole cat and heat aspect of it. Why it's a black cat? It's because black cats are more magical than other cats.
Yeah, agreed.
So, but I think that, you know, you throw the black cat hair in there. I'm curious about the steel wool and the iron shot in that particular scenario, other than thinking maybe it's sort of like a shotgun blast to sexy it to their face. You know?
Well, I can see the shot from the curse breaking aspect of it too, like you know, shooting through it, like the chains around you, kind of
steel wool. Same thing, scrubbing right away.
Yeah,
I get that. The black cat in the curse breaking. The only thing I see about that is that again, it's a magical animal, and you know, it's supposed to be bad luck if a black cat crosses your path. So if you're already crossed and you send the black cat across again, it's going to sort of double cross it.
Okay, I can see that.
That's just why I would think it might work. But that's purely speculative.
So, okay, that's black cat oil.
Cool, very cool. I'm thinking about making some of that up. I'll have to see if I can lay hold of a couple of shotgun shells or something.
Yeah.
So
maybe we could put some in the store.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd be all about that. I'm going to see if I can tweak the recipe and play with it, see what I can get out of it.
Interesting.
So, if anybody needs to throw a few curses at me so I can try breaking them. Give me a couple weeks. please don't. Please don't curse me. I lead a very busy life and have very little time for curse breaking right now. but if you do, I will use this black cat.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Musical interlude. Then we're going to talk about familiars again. All right. So, in Spelled Out today, I thought I would look at something that I came across in the book that Lane brought, which is Magical Creatures by Elizabeth Pepper and Barbara Stacey from the Witch's Almanac Publishing Company. And in the cat section, they talk about an 18th century English witch who uses a specific ritual to bind herself to a cat and thereby sort of acquire a familiar. And this is one of those things where I think, as we said earlier, if you have an animal in your life that you feel probably is a familiar or is waiting to be bound to you in that way, I think this would be a really interesting way to approach it. And it's also really interesting because I think it's kind of this, it's got a hedge crossing quality to it.
Okay.
And a shape-shifting aspect. And I really, it's just very all-encompassing, the ritual. So let me read through it.
Okay.
And then we'll talk a little bit more about it. Okay. An 18th century English witch described a ritual using a cat to cast a spell. To be performed every evening at the same place at moonrise. Adapt your cat to sit close by you, facing the east. Stroke gently but firmly with love in your hands until its purrs and your breathing are heard as one sound. Now you and your cat possess the same will. Your eyes will see alike. Your thoughts will travel together. The time has come to work spells and cast enchantments, for power is doubled through the agency of your familiar creature. So I really like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's this synchronized breathing activity that you're doing with your cat to really get yourself in tune. And I've used that, the synchronized breathing technique with people before, because you can, it's really interesting. If you ever like, you want to calm yourself down, you just try to synchronize your breathing with people. And then once you get in sync with them, try to slow their breathing down. By you're slowing your breathing down little by little. And a lot of times you can get people to calm themselves down and you calm yourself down. And it's really effective in conflict situations.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew that like people who sleep together often, their breathing will
begin to synchronize.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In the middle of the night. It's mm-hmm. really random, but
no, but that's just as there's this sort of this default state that we get into
mm-hmm.
where we synchronize ourselves to something and it really binds us to it.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that's very powerful in terms of, you know, you are willfully connecting to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I also like that it talks about like seeing through the eyes of the cat. And I think if you can make that eye contact while you're synchronizing the breathing, that would even be more powerful.
Yeah. I can see that working well with a dog as well.
Mm-hmm.
If I could bring up that documentary again,
mm-hmm.
another study that they did, you know how women produce oxytocin
mm-hmm.
When they give birth and when they breastfeed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did, they took blood samples of an owner and their dog, and then just like resting mm-hmm. or whatever. And then they did a pet session, just, you know, rubbing and petting very gently and, you know, just letting the dog kind of lay there and enjoy it. And after 1 minute, oxytocin was present in the blood. And after 3 minutes, it was as high as a breastfeeding mother in both the mother and the dog.
Interesting.
So I just thought that was really cool. So, you know, like that might be mm-hmm. a good way to bond, because that's how women bond with their babies mm-hmm. is, you know, through that interaction. And so with dogs, it can be done the same way. So like by that petting.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's an across species kind of thing. Cause that's clearly not a straight biological imperative. It's not.
Right.
It's not a good feeling you get because you're nourishing your young and therefore ensuring your genealogical lineage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much different thing.
Right.
It's very, very spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
I dig that.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think that would be a very effective technique mm-hmm. to get yourself connected to an animal, especially if you're wanting to sort of bring that animal into your magical practice.
Yeah.
But, you know, that being said, if you're going to do that, you need to be prepared for what that entails too. Animals, even familiars, I think, can be a little unpredictable. So
definitely.
So, you know, if you don't want your cat lighting itself on fire, be careful where you put your candles. So that was for you, Velma. anyway. But okay, so that's spelled out for the evening.
I guess so.
All right. Well, we'll, I guess, get to wrapping up. The contest is still on.
Yes, it is. Send us your magical lore.
Yes, magical lore about
and the traditions.
Winter holidays, fall and winter holidays. Primarily winter holidays, is because that's what we're putting the special together on.
Right.
I don't think we said in the last episode, but the cutoff date for that is midnight on December 6th.
Okay.
So please have your submissions in by then. I've already gotten quite a few, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And we're going to have some amazing episodes based on this stuff. So yeah, please do send your submissions in. Again, you can get an extra submission by tweeting or posting on Facebook or using whatever social media.
Yeah, or blogging, whatever you want to do. And just link us to that or prove it, pretty much.
Yeah. We demand absolute proof. Documentation.
Show your work.
We want a letter from your third grade teacher talking about the witchcraft that you're studying now. Anyway. So, yeah, that's that contest. Do we have anything else going on?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Again, we apologize that this is not an interview episode, but hopefully we'll be back.
And hopefully you learned something.
Yeah, hopefully it was a good episode for y'all. I have to keep using the word y'all. I just found out that we have listeners who are listening just because of our sexy accents.
Really?
Indeed.
See, I don't hear much of an accent.
I don't either.
But I mean, I know I have one. Don't get me wrong. I have no delusions about that. But it used to be a lot worse, but I took a lot of drama in high school, and I was able to get some of that out of there. Mm-hmm. Like, a ballpoint pen used to be pen.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually distinguished those two words now. But
over there used to be up yonder.
No, I've never said yonder. I don't like that word. But sometimes I'll be like, I'll re-listen to some of the episodes just to, I don't know, because familiarize myself with what we said. Uh-huh. You know, I'll hear certain words and I'll be like, wow, did I just say that? But
did I just say that?
I mean, I don't sound like a yokel, but
mm-mm.
I don't know. I just think it's funny, like, that some people, like, really hear an accent on us.
Yeah. Well, when I get excited, I break into a little more of a Southern accent.
Yeah.
Or when I do the storytelling episodes, mm-hmm. but that's because storytelling's better in a Southern accent. But I told Araya that I was going to have to McConaughey up the next couple of episodes. She said, yeah, but you lose instant points for using McConaughey as a verb and reminding us of his existence. So, fair call to that. I can't say that's not true.
Oh, that's funny.
But anyway.
So thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Yuns, for listening.
Yuns.
If you want to reach us, you can write to us at our blog, which is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Or email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
And until next time, we'd just like to say thank you for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music.